Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot.
And here we are in November, ready for the November podcast.
And here we are in our at-home studio.
Oh, yes.
In recovery.
At-home studio. After 8,700 miles to Alaska and back, we are back at the homestead where the weather has been actually very nice. The weather in Alaska was good, but
this
the weather
was better.
Has been better, nice and warm. The drive back was good, and we had really no further problems after last month's little problem with the engine. We made it home without any further incident. But we want to end up Alaska with another interview. We have tried to provide you with before and afters, and here we are going to be interviewing Chris and Jean, who accompanied us on the RV caravan, and we're going to hear their perspective of the RV caravan after it was over. And so here's our interview. Take it away, Chris and Jean.
Yeah.
Well, dear listener, we are back again, and we are here with Chris and Jean, who traveled with us, or we traveled with them, to Alaska. And this will be our last talk about Alaska, but we want to share with you some of the experiences that they've had, because Alaska is a big bucket list destination. And it was a bucket destination for you guys, wasn't
it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how long have you been planning it?
Well, we talked about it 2.5
over
years.
Over a year.
Well, about two years ago.
You've talked about it for years, but really planning this one, a little over a year.
Is that necessary?
It depends who you are.
That's right.
Well, especially the way we started out, we thought we were going to go by ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's
not
right.
With your family.
You explained
family.
That last time. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Okay, so.
You do need to plan that.
So, but many of the caravans do fill up. And so if you don't sign up by September, I would think you're going to be out of luck. For anything, any of the companies.
Especially if you're not very flexible about the dates.
Yeah. If you're not flexible.
Yes, because people do come and go in our age bracket, and sometimes they have last-minute openings, but still.
So we sat here on the 20th of July talking about these things, and now it's the 20th of September. What did you learn in the last 2 months about Alaska?
I think I learned that I'm very glad we chose a caravan for the first time.
Uh-huh.
But I can see where I want to go back. And I want to do it on my schedule.
Uh-huh.
And take longer.
So what?
Only hit the places that I really want to see.
Why wouldn't you go with another caravan?
I don't think we need to now.
Uh-huh. Did you need to the first time?
Well, we didn't know that. That was why. Uh-huh. I mean,
you thought you did.
I thought I did.
Why did you think you needed to?
Well, I didn't want to go by ourselves.
Why?
Because it's just the two of us. It'd be like...
The security...
But you'd do that again.
Security on the road. Uh-huh. You know, there's that type of thing. Everybody talked about how bad the roads were and everything. But they weren't that bad. They're not great roads at times, but they're not bad.
Yeah, they certainly didn't live up to the hype.
Right.
People over... emphasize the roads.
Right.
To me, after we got to Alaska in particular, other than a few dips in the roads for the frost heaves, the roads were good.
Right.
I mean, not four-lane superhighway type good, but nice, you know, smooth and decent, not any sort of danger to your vehicle or you.
Right, right. And I think, you know, you realize, too, there's more services there than you think. It's
really?
It's not like the lower 48 by any means, but it's not... You know, where there's no services. People have to eat.
Vehicles break down and somebody helps them and they get going again.
Exactly. You know, I would feel very comfortable going back. And even if we went alone the next time, which we might end up doing because we want to stay longer.
Yeah.
The whole spring and summer.
Do the whole spring and summer.
Yeah.
So a recommendation is 2 months is too short.
Yes.
I'm sure that's hard for people listening to believe.
I did feel rushed.
You did feel rushed.
We did a lot, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, after it was over, it was like, oh, I need to relax and take a rest.
Yeah.
There was a lot to do, so.
I think, you know, it was nice that you still did your blog. You still done your journaling. Yeah. I just felt like every day we'd get back and we'd be like, I'm done for the day.
And so you did a lot of excursions. I mean, there were a lot of options on this trip.
And yes, you did. We did a lot.
And which?
I think we did like 24 excursions on
Ooh,
the list.
Really?
Yeah, we did a lot of excursions.
But from that pick of 60, that's.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
All.
But
you felt like you whittled it down.
We did. We could have squeezed more in probably,
yeah,
but.
Yeah. Yeah.
So refresh our listeners' memory for how this trip worked in
Before
terms of the excursions.
Trip,
yeah.
Excursions and
the
stuff.
The excursions that, you know, you had that book, you chose the excursions. And
so it was flexible
it
what
was
you
very
did.
Flexible.
It wasn't like a bus tour where everybody gets off and goes on a.
Right.
No, not at all. And right. I think that was the interesting part, that you would be taking off to go somewhere.
Yes.
And we would be going to a totally different place
right.
that interested us. And what interested you?
Right.
Some days we were all together. You know, there was like the Lulu Bell. We all
just there were just two tours that were everybody.
There
was
everybody.
Together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't even think the Lulu Bell.
I think everybody was on that.
Okay.
Everybody
went
on
yeah.
the Lulu Bell, but I don't think everybody went on the sightseeing in Seward. Wasn't that the?
No.
Oh, that was
that
included.
We
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think everybody did that. That and then the other one was the side
Nick,
by side.
The Nick
oh,
Glaser
the
one.
By.
Yes. Oh,
everybody did that.
Side, yeah.
So did you do some things you wouldn't have done by yourselves? How was the advice that you got?
I think it was mixed. I think, you know, there were some things that we chose, and we went by the description
uh-huh.
that was in the book, which, as it turns out, was lifted right from the vendor's
yeah.
website. But that things had changed since
uh-huh.
they had printed that. And that was a disappointment. If I would have known, I would have done my own homework and arranged for an additional tour
uh-huh.
on that particular excursion. We would have gotten both out to the point in Barrow, and also we would have gotten to the cultural center
mm-hmm.
or tried to meet up with some local.
So this tour was which one?
The one up to Barrow, up there.
Uh-huh.
Arctic.
This
Above
was a, this
Arctic
was an
Circle.
Extensive tour. I mean,
Overnight.
Describe it a little bit.
Well. Yeah, and that's probably something that we wouldn't have even
considered
doing on our own.
Yeah,
right.
I would.
But it was on
right.
the list, so hey, get to go up to the
northernmost,
the most northern point for the United States.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be Barrow. Now they call it Utqiagvik.
Yeah.
And that's not even the correct pronunciation. But
no one would know but you.
they do. But we flew out of. We had to fly out of Fairbanks to Anchorage. Anchorage up to Barrow. We spent the night up there. We did a tour. Which was kind of nice, out to the point, something you wouldn't be able to do. Hoping to see polar bears, only found the tracks, but
a lot. We saw a lot of
tracks. They were certainly there, but
yeah.
not on the spit as we were. So,
yeah.
But it was interesting to see how they lived in a town that's basically cut off in the summertime, except for flying in or.
It's cut ship. Off in the summer because there's no ice.
In the winter, they can not plow, but. They can make a road to Prudhoe Bay.
Really?
And then they drive down from there. They can get to Fairbanks.
Right.
That's a pretty long drive.
Mm, yeah.
Wow.
And this tour, of course, is one that I don't think anybody else offers. You might be able to do it on your own.
You can do it on your
own. If you
own.
Found yes. that tour company, yeah.
Yeah. So that,
if you knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the nice things about this company is that that was in the catalog and it was available. And you were the only two who did it.
Yeah.
From our group, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the only two that selected it, yes.
Yeah.
And we did two tours that we were the only ones on them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a unique experience to be all by
yourself while you're with a group.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Right, but that is the benefit of this caravan setup.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
pick and choose.
That whole thing, the group gets together and people talk about their day's activities. And then we had a disappointing experience with our landing on the glacier in Denali. And so people had talked so highly about the Kinnick Glacier and the helicopter ride out.
Yeah.
And so that was an option. We could drive back to Palmer
and do that.
Yeah.
And we knew from other people's experience that it was worth our time and our money.
So having a group, it allows you to share experiences and to pick up on other ideas that you didn't have, which you wouldn't get on your own.
This tour operator allowed us to book that after the fact. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. We'd all left that area to the next stop, and we drove back one day.
Due to bad weather, you missed the...
We hadn't signed up for it at all.
No, not at all.
And we got disappointed on a different excursion.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So we decided, well, we're just going to add...
But I think that's also part of the service that this caravan provided, that concierge level of making appointments for your tours and shifting them if there's weather.
That was very impressive to us. And the fact that we never had to stand in line for tickets and we never had to contact a vendor. You know, it was all, and if the weather was bad, it was all taken care of. We didn't have to worry about getting money back or whatever. All of that behind the scenes work was taken care of for us.
Right. By one person.
Literally.
That was so surprising.
It worked, though.
Well, yeah.
She had a system, that's for sure.
She has a system for making that work. What was your favorite excursion?
It's easy.
Katmai, going and walking with the bears. That's hands down the best.
That's the best. Mm-hmm. We'd even do it again.
And yours?
Ours was the one we put down was the Nick Glacier side by side.
Okay.
We don't do ATVing.
Neither do we.
And it had a variety. We did it twice
on this trip, and it was very enjoyable. She doesn't like to drive, so it was nice that it was a side-by-side. Mm-hmm. And I like to drive, so that was nice. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what to expect. I mean, we got out there, and you see the icebergs floating in the water.
Right.
And you say, whoa.
Right.
and then they cooked us a lunch. I mean, you know, that was special. I don't know. We were just kind of blown away by
that. That was on our top five.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was on our top five.
It was just fun to drive those things.
Yeah, it's true.
The rough roads through the rivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing with the bears could well have been our number one, but we had already done it for a week, so.
Oh.
Yeah, that's, yeah that was.
We're not normal.
Yeah, that was hands down our favorite. I think just being so close that even with my little iPhone, I could get an adequate picture.
Uh-huh. It was a thrill. When you're with animals like that, I always feel like I'm in the Garden of Eden.
It was just a special day. I mean, I love doing the walk over the subarctic tundra, but, you know, just being out there for the day, and it was...
Yeah,
and they're doing what they want to do. It's not going to a zoo.
And I felt comfortable with the company that flew us out. The pilot had a lot of experience, and the guide was excellent. So I felt very good.
Which is, once again, a feature of this trip, because I think all of our vendors were very competent, and we felt comfortable with all of them.
The pilots were good.
Yeah.
The guides were good.
I mean, the weather, you know, you can't control.
Can't control weather, no.
Yeah.
Because that was a bad day. the Katmai Bear Day. Remember, it was raining and crappy.
Well, it started out that way, though. We weren't sitting in the rain for lunch when we sat there and everything. So, I mean, it was, I think the weather certainly could have been worse. We were fortunate that it was.
It was an Alaska day.
Right.
So did the weather impact our trip?
Well, I think it impacted our, you know, when we were flying out of Fairbanks and we were going to do the flight to the Arctic to Weissman, that was a little bit of disappointment because we got there at 6 in the morning, and lucky for the operator, they sold out the whole plane. And then we get a lecture from what I assume is the manager there, and he's giving us all this, well, if you can't land there, we'll land in a different place. And the weather had been really bad. And I think in hindsight, if you have to fly IFR all the way there, how can you expect to then fly VFR into this little airport? And the gentleman had said too, he said, so if that's not okay, you can leave now and it won't cost you anything. And I thought, at the time, I thought it was an odd statement, but I kind of wish that Cindy, our company, she could have said, you know,
you shouldn't go.
We shouldn't go. But we all went. And then we landed at this other airport that had a navigation beacon. And then we had a very expensive breakfast because our flight was... I mean, that's why I look at it. It was a flight to breakfast.
Uh-huh. A road trip to breakfast.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
So, you know, because you fly to the Arctic, you want to see some of these national parks.
Yeah, sure.
You only can fly.
You don't want to fly over them in the clouds.
No.
That's what we
did.
No, we couldn't see a thing.
You are now, you know, above the certain such a parallel, and we just passed so-and-so national park. Yeah, and I'm like...
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, that was the only one I was... Very disappointed.
I can see that
they didn't cancel, and you know. But I have you as a not ever being there before.
You don't
have no idea,
yeah. Right?
Yeah. But if their chance of landing is 10%, just say that 10%, and I'll say okay, I'll come back another day.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think you know. It, even if we had booked that on our own, we wouldn't have known.
I assume that's one of the worst ones that you put down.
No.
No.
Sultry?
The sultry.
Oh, everybody put that down. I'm sorry. The sultry was, such a disappointment.
Everybody put that
down. Yeah, that was number one disappointment.
Such a disappointment.
You know, if you do 30 or 20, whatever you said, a number of excursions, you're going to have some that are going to be bad. And you're going to, whether you book them or somebody else books them, I think that's going to be a problem.
Right.
And that's why we came back, is because there are things here that we did that we didn't do that we want to do.
Right.
You just can't do it all, even in...
As 63 days.
As long as we've been here, we can't do it all.
Yeah. I think the nice thing, you can really tell that she has established relationships with these vendors.
Yes.
And she has a little bit of clout and easy to call them and say, I want to add two people. Or when we drove back to Palmer, she added that helicopter flight for us and was able to get us in. Even though they had been very busy.
Yeah, and there were other people waiting probably in the line.
Right.
And she did that with us. Well, I think she did that with almost everybody. There was some sort of situation where the weather was bad and she switched it to another day, which from our experience when we were in Haines last time, remember that's we did the flight over the national park there, and we waited for 3 days. We were in daily contact with the pilots, and... They just finally said, you know,
forget it.
But there was nobody there to adjust. You know, we had to do that all of on our own. So she was able to get us in there. So I don't know. We were happy about that particular.
Well, there was another example where one of our other participants had a bad flight. You know, it was the door slightly opened and he was freezing. He didn't really get to enjoy what they were, whatever sightseeing they were doing. She got it rebooked and they tried it again.
Really?
Yeah. He went the next day, actually.
I don't remember what excursion was.
Well, that's nice.
That's commendable.
Well, and another positive thing. So you're pretty happy with the company,
the concierge service.
Well, we haven't ever done a caravan before, so this is all new to us. But
so are there just things about caravanning that you didn't like?
Actually, it's kind of the opposite. We were like, well, we don't know if we're big group people. For traveling, and actually, I enjoyed people's company, especially meeting you guys on the road here.
Well, that was my number one highlight of the trip, was meeting the navigators.
I see.
Skipped over that part.
So the social experience was good for you?
It was good.
Yeah, we were. It was kind of nice sharing, you know, your day's activities and
experiences.
And hearing other people's experiences.
And sharing the on the road stuff, too, you know. How would you experience the roads and where did you stop for lunch?
But it's also a little peer pressure because, you know, you're tired at the end of the day. Oh, the Aurora might be tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm not going to go out there. And then everybody else went out there and they saw it and they're sharing their pictures. And I'm like... Okay, tomorrow I'm going to get up. If it would have just been us, I wouldn't have even known.
That's good, though, in some ways, because it got you to do more things and expanded your horizons, which wouldn't have happened before by yourself.
Yes.
And I think that's typical of caravans. I would not hesitate to go on another one.
See, and that's my attitude now.
But this is our sixth one, so...
Yeah, I mean, I would consider another one somewhere
else. Other caravans, though, operate very differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
they're much more group oriented.
Yeah, the boutiqueness of this, you know, a la carte, it was very, very nice.
But I don't think that that's bad. I mean, there are advantages to having it as a
more
group,
shared activities.
More shared activities. You have even more to talk about, and you get to know people much better because you're in.
You see them more often.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we met you guys, we liked what we saw, and then you went and you did all these things, and we never saw you again.
And here I'm hearing some of these stories for the first time, which is really a shame.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, we should have shared these.
We tried to get you to Barrow.
Yeah. Well, we wanted. As a novice, you would say this is a good way to travel to Alaska.
Yes, especially if you have any hesitations.
I see so many people, videos and whatnot, that people that visit Alaska, and they don't do a tenth of what we did on just this one caravan. For us to have done all the research to find the things we did, for me, that would have been months of research.
And, we wouldn't have done all those
And you would have been hesitant, you know, did I make the right decision? Here it was already made. You just said, I want to go to this place.
And you have to research each of the tour operators for the one thing
that's what I'm saying,
do.
Right? Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you don't know for sure whether you got the right one. So how'd your rig fare?
Good.
Yeah, of course, everything's rattling a little more than it did. But.
Maybe. I was trying to figure that out.
So refresh our memory.
So I have a Newmar Baystar.
2017.
That's a 31 footer. It's a gas model. So I think the gas model for the Class A for us, we were a little bit slower than other people, perhaps.
Oh.
Not like overall speed, but you know, when the grades go up, I notice, you know, the big diesel pushers or even the trucks, the big diesel trucks, pickups, they have much better acceleration and can maintain where we have to, you know. We'll go a little slower on the up and slower on the down.
And there were a lot of hills.
It was it was hilly, but it wasn't, I don't consider it mountainous.
How'd you fare there?
Skagway and Haines, that was fine. The speed limit was 40, and we were doing 35 uphill. So
were you really? Well, so
totally fine.
So you were fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that.
Yeah, that was not a problem.
So a medium-sized gasser is. You were satisfied with its performance and livability.
Livability is great. I mean,
yeah, we're fine with the 32 feet overall. So.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so that worked out okay. We didn't have any.
And finding gas was okay.
Us, yeah.
Gas is easier than diesel, I think, really.
Yeah. I think everybody had both. But you didn't find distances. I mean, so many people talk about the long distances between stations, but once again, this is a myth.
Right.
As far as I can see.
Well, I mean, we have 500-plus mile range. Mm-hmm. So, but even we try to fill up at the half mark, and that was no problem. We could do our day drive and not worry about it, just endpoints to get the gas. Yeah. So.
And the campgrounds?
Yeah.
Well,
they're rough. You're certainly not coming to Alaska to go to an RV resort, right?
Yeah.
So
you're not going to spend any time there.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, we hardly had any time for campfires or any sort of activities.
But our seven nights in Homer was spectacular. I mean, the campground was just the dirt strip.
Yeah. But you had
such a fabulous view out your window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were in your rig, it was fantastic. Yeah.
Waking up in the morning and
looking at the sea.
Yes, it was really
across the sea
nice.
To the mountains and the glaciers on the other side. Yeah, that was great.
I think a lot of people think about coming to Alaska and doing boondocking. Do you wish you would have done, or would you do more if you came back?
No, but I think one interesting thing that happened, which wasn't even on my radar, is some people were a little disappointed with certain campgrounds, and their dogs had issues with being so close together or whatever the issues were.
Mm.
And so they took off and they made their own reservation in Denali at the National Park. And so they drove with the group or, you know, but told, you know, the operator that you were going to stay two nights over there in the Denali National Park, but we'll still do all the activities.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, how smart was that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they had not planned that ahead. That was
impromptu.
And they went to the national park and found that there was some availability.
They were in a small rig, so it was easy for them to fit.
They were boondocking.
For them to do, So that's a nice option, but you would never be able to get 17 rigs in the national park, you know, a group like that. So,
well, and it doesn't have any facilities. And I think one of the features of this tour was the fact that you had the best facilities that were available. And that usually meant at least 30 amp and water at every campground. And I think from our previous experience, they often stick in a day or two of boondocking because the campgrounds aren't worth staying at.
Right.
And whereas this one, she absolutely emphasized up front that you would have services. And that meant that we stayed in some places that were not the best.
Scenic.
Beautiful.
Scenic.
Right, right.
I think if we were driving on our own, we would overnight dry camp, like on our way up.
Sure.
Perhaps more. But like if I got to Homer, I'd like to go back to that same campground because I thought that was great. Or Seward, that was great. Valdez is the one I was thinking of.
Valdez on the water.
Valdez right there on the water. Yeah. That was
great. And we stayed in that.
But on the way up, you know, make some of the longer drives that we did shorter by just an overnighter.
I think one of the things that's frustrated us is that we've had to pass so many places I would like to stop and stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drive down this little road, and there's you see the provincial campground down there, and we stayed at Muncho Lake, for instance.
Beautiful, we drove by the other day.
Yeah. And we stayed at that. It was on the peninsula, on the water.
Mm-hmm. And we actually said as we drove by,
it was closed.
That we next need to come back here.
Put that on the list.
That's the kind of experience that we were able to take advantage of that the caravan, of course, couldn't.
Well, and I think as a organizer of a caravan, you want to market to people who are bringing all sorts of different kinds of rigs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I can remember a caravan we were on where you let the lady plug into us because she was so out of juice because the campground was not adequate. So that's a concern.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's, I'm glad we did the batteries because we could supplement what the campground couldn't provide, you know. When you get a text message that says, don't use your space heater.
Cold.
And it's cold. You think, well, we have batteries. We can supplement so that somebody else can use their space heater.
Right. I turned off. We just went off the grid. We unplugged from the campground.
Yeah. So other people would have electric. I think one thing we found is at this day and age, I'd say Starlink is a must-have.
A blessing
to go.
And I would say probably three-quarters of our group had it.
I think
more than that.
I only know one that didn't.
Oh, only one?
Really?
Jim?
Maybe two. Yeah, Jim. I guess.
And Judy.
Judy.
So two people.
But I think
it's a must-have, especially if you go on your own.
Yeah.
If you're trying to book things or check on bookings that you made at home.
Or make a phone call.
You would need to, you guys would camp out at the restaurants or something and be using their Wi-Fi
This trip is even another level above because as we're driving through Canada, there's no services. So those people that had the Starlink Mini.
Well, not even the Mini, you just had to have it mounted.
So long as you have it, well, I'm thinking of us in a motorhome pulling a car.
You could have it mounted on your roof.
Yeah, you could have it mounted on your roof, but then if you
this is a conundrum which I've tried to face.
I wondered about both.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and I specifically didn't mount ours because I want to be able to move it around based on.
Mm-hmm.
But Doug has had good luck, and he's driving down the road.
He put it on the roof of his truck.
But you saw he has to run a cord out to his truck every night.
But as he goes out into Nolly Park to see the animals tonight, he still has it on the roof and he still has connection.
So it acts as a phone service. And the phone service is definitely very spotty, to say the least.
So that's definitely, I think.
How'd you find the costs of things after we paid for the expensive tour, but the things in Alaska or Yukon here? Grocery store, gas.
Grocery store.
Other things.
I mean, I think going out to eat felt a little bit more expensive.
A little?
They're from California. They're from California. Oh,
okay. California.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
And, well, speaking of California and gas, it wasn't. On our caravan, we averaged $4 a gallon for buying gas.
And that's cheap?
For California.
That is right in line.
For California.
it never got to 5 gallons.
You know, $5.
$5 a gallon. But it never went below 3 either. So.
Yeah.
Below 3?
See?
Okay.
Well, it depends on.
Well, around us, it was like 315, 320.
Yeah, yeah.
Our average. Right now, that's what the average is.
Depends on your point of reference.
Yeah. How about. So, eating out was expensive. Groceries?
Groceries were a little bit more expensive. And especially in some places. Just out of curiosity, when we went to Borough, I went to a convenience store and took some photos of the groceries on the shelf. If you want a bag of chips, you're going to pay $12. Ooh. And we're talking a little bag of chips. You know, cookies were like $15 for a small package of cookies.
But, you know, that's how interesting how they live up there. I don't think they're shopping at that store all the time.
No, no. They catch their own food.
Yeah. It's funny. I thought when she started talking at the beginning about, you know, the grocery stores and on some days, you know, there's no food really in the store because they get their supply.
Their barge comes in.
And I thought it was maybe a little over the top until I experienced it myself.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow.
Well, we're in small, I mean, we stayed in a lot of small communities.
Very small.
I mean, 2,000 and 3,000 people.
And isolated.
And isolated, right. Mm-hmm. So they do have a different lifestyle than we do. Mm-hmm. And like the lady said on our tour, she never locks her door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when
right.
she bought her house, they couldn't even find the key to the front door because they'd never locked it.
Right.
Which is a whole different sort of... Did you feel safe?
I did. Well, yeah, actually, I did.
I haven't felt
no
any
issue.
issues there at all.
No issue.
Campgrounds, everybody's friendly. And
people were nice.
People were nice.
And people were welcoming. I mean, I didn't feel like they were pushing away tourists or you know, they were aloof or anything. And people seemed to be pretty nice.
Right.
In the stores and places, you go into the grocery store and people were helpful. And
right.
Easy to
chat. My experience.
No, absolutely. Same thing.
I felt that even in Canada
as
we drove. I think they were happy to see us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
so, final thoughts for our listeners.
I'm glad we went.
Positive experience.
It was a positive experience.
Definitely
overall.
Glad.
And not something to worry about.
Absolutely.
Oh, going
not.
To Alaska? No. Not now.
No.
That we've done it.
Well, and if we knew before what we know now, we would have gone.
But that's why you go.
But we were nervous.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to go by ourselves. And then when we knew that other family members weren't going to go.
Yeah.
We just didn't want to go by ourselves.
Uh-huh. So the bottom line here is do it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
As soon as you can, because it might change.
And it was worth every penny.
And for as long as you can.
Oh, I
think stay as long as you
spring
can.
Spring and summer. Chase the snow away and let it chase
you
out.
Yeah, spring or summer trip?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. That's
you know, follow the
snow. I want to see more snow on the mountains
in
the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fall colors were fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Going
right.
Through
we've
Denali.
It's all good.
The fall colors in Denali were just...
Of course, we come from Southern California, so we don't get fall colors, really.
Yeah, we miss the reds.
Exactly.
We have lots of red trees, which are
red and
very
orange,
beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, right here...
It's everything is yellow.
September 20th, and it is... The trees are losing their leaves. The fall colors are over here, I think.
To remind you where you are.
Okay, so it's been very nice having you join us, and I'm really glad that you made yourselves known and can join us on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope we can continue our friendship in the future.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, we thank Chris and Jean for their final interview. Hopefully, all these friends have given you various perspectives on traveling to Alaska. And because we are completing our third trip to Alaska with the motorhome, I have some final thoughts as well.
Okay.
I'm sure that many of you have been listening to this saying, I want to go to Alaska. How should I do it? And in my mind, there are three distinct choices that are determined by how much money you have.
Always.
It is certainly very feasible to go to Alaska by yourself. And boondock, which would be the most economical way to do it. Early in this trip, I spoke to one of our fellow travelers and said how much I had enjoyed the days that we had boondocked. And she said to me, oh, no, you can't do that anymore. I watched YouTube and there are no boondocking places available. And I want to emphasize to you that that is not the case. There were many places where you could just pull off the road and spend the night. We saw people doing it. It's very feasible. You didn't need reservations. Chances are, the closer you are to a town, Homer would be the one that really would stick out in my mind. They would tend to fill up more readily. But even there, there were many places you could
boondock. There was actually a boondocking campground on the water.
Or spend the night and pay a little bit for it. But I want to emphasize that if you boondock a lot, you have to be ready with your rig to take care of taking on fresh water and getting rid of the non-fresh water and your garbage. And that can be a hassle because most of the time you go to a campground to do those things. And everything in Alaska is very expensive, and if you are expecting to dump in somebody's campground and not spend the night with them, they will probably be unhappy with you and charge you more than you would expect. Sure. That's only right. So boondocking is definitely an option, a very viable one if you don't have a lot of money to throw around. Then, of course, there are a number of caravans that do Alaska trips. We have not done a trip to Alaska with those kinds of caravans, but we have taken them other parts of the world, Mexico, Marine South Canada, Africa. Lots of different places.
Yes.
So those caravans are what I would call medium priced, and they have some advantages that were not immediately obvious to our fellow travelers, I would say. What appealed to them about our caravan leadership is that they had been doing this trip twice a summer for 10 years, and they felt that they had a very intimate understanding of Alaska and Yukon and the demands of the land and driving. And that was true. But the big caravan companies do a very good job of training their leaders. And on the big caravans, you have four sets of people that are taking care of you rather than two. Some of that is driven by the fact that those caravans take more people. But it also means that if there is a problem, that somebody has a medical issue or their pet has a medical issue or you break down somewhere, there are more pairs of hands to help you out if that is the case. And these caravans, because they go throughout the summer, are in fairly regular communication with one another. So often we had leadership who knew exactly what was going on down the road because the people that were ahead of us emailed them or called them and said, this is what's happening, avoid this area, blah, blah, blah. So even though those people might not have been as experienced as our leaders were on this caravan, they still gave us good advice, gave us good guidance, and knew what to tell us to do.
Plus, they offer a wide variety of itineraries.
And they go throughout the summer.
Right.
Our caravan, because the leadership is in a very small company that's just these two people, had to do two trips this summer to make it economically viable for themselves.
Yes.
And this meant, in my opinion, that you had to make a somewhat sacrificial decision to miss the baby animals in the spring or miss the northern lights in the fall. We much would prefer to go on a caravan that took place throughout the middle of the summer where you can pick up on both of those things. And another thing that I really like about the bigger caravans at the moment is that they have an itinerary which starts in one place and ends in a different place. Our caravan had to do quite a bit of backtracking, and even though what we saw later on in the summer was different than what we saw when we first arrived, I'm talking about vegetation and animals and things like that, it was kind of boring to have to repeat so much of the itinerary. And I would suggest to you that you look at the itinerary carefully from that perspective, as well as how many hours or miles a day you have to drive, which is also a very important consideration.
So the bottom line here is that some of them leave from Dawson Creek, where we left, and end in Prince Rupert. And to do that, you have to go down the Cassiar, about halfway down the coast. But that's an entirely different experience, and so that adds to the variety in the itinerary.
You feel more like you've seen it all.
Yeah.
And with Alaska, you cannot see it all. That state is enormous, and many of the places that are there are not places you can drive to. But even with that in mind, we certainly did not go to all the places you can drive to in Alaska on the caravan that we just recently completed and have been talking to you about. But our caravan, as we have alluded, it was by far the most expensive choice that we're aware of. And for that, we got very good service. We went on very la-di-da excursions, la-di-da. A lot of planes and helicopters and ATVs. We had what I would call white glove service. Our guide met us every time we were about to leave and handled the tickets and handled the tips, and we didn't have to worry about any of those details at all. And at times she was able to reschedule us when the weather was not cooperating with our plans, and she gave us the best opportunity to see and do all the things that we had signed up to see and do. And that was, to me, the outstanding feature of this more expensive caravan choice.
And you've heard lots about our caravan, but the other companies do offer you very viable choices, but they're a little bit more group-oriented, which is okay. Plus the fact that if you are a little bit apprehensive about crossing the border, they have some that actually start in the United States and end back in the United States. They have some that include things like Calgary or Banff and Jasper, which we had to do on our own. Ours was focused on Alaska and doing the Alaska Highway. Another thing that was missing from ours was the Top of the World Highway, where you go from Chicken and then come down to Dawson Creek and then back down to
Dawson City.
Dawson City, thank you. And then you come back down. So you miss much of the second drive that you would have to, or the round trip drive on the Alaska Highway. So there's some definite pluses and minuses with each of these tours, and you need to carefully consider what is best for you.
Another thing I want to mention with the medium-priced caravans is because you are with more rigs, whenever you get to a campground, it takes longer for everybody to get parked. They always tell you, and the caravan we were just on said the same thing, try not to all arrive at the same time, try all not to leave at the same time. But sometimes you would just stack up behind a road construction event or something like that. And even on the smaller caravan that we just completed, there were times where we had to wait for the people ahead of us to get parked. It's just a bit of an ordeal depending on the park and how big your rig is and how good they are at helping you to park, which is another feature that these caravans have. If you are a little reluctant to back up and look for pull-through sites whenever possible, they help you to deal with that. So but you have to be patient when you get to the end of the day because it just takes a little longer.
But as we've mentioned before, we stayed in many of the same campgrounds as the Fantasy and Air and Adventure caravans, so that they use the same campsites, campgrounds, as we used. And we should also mention that we were rarely in a campground that was full, so that you could also stay in the very same campgrounds that the caravans stay in, presumably without a problem. I don't know. I was surprised that the campgrounds were not chock-a-block.
Yeah, I was too.
But that was a feature.
And the other thing I would recommend if you're going to do this on your own is to purchase the milepost ahead of time, which when you first get it is kind of a confounding book because it literally tells you like every 20 feet what you're going to see on the highway. And it goes through all the highways and they merge. And depending on whether you're going north or south or east or west, it's a little bit tough to read. But it definitely tells you everything that's on the road and everything you can look forward to seeing. You just have to take the time to sit down and read it.
Including the gas stations and the food stops and the restaurants, and everything is listed in the milepost. And so it's a complete guide, and you could put together your own itinerary that would be suitable for you. Now, one of the other things that was a benefit to us is that we stayed in most locations for quite a long time, which was good. At Homer, for instance, we stayed for a week, and in Fairbanks, I think we stayed for six nights. And so we tended to stay in places longer than other caravans. But ours was 63 days in Alaska. Well, on the Alaska Alcan Highway and Alaska, whereas others didn't had to include more distances, and itinerary was a little bit broader than ours.
In terms of bringing food, I want to be clear to you that Alaskans eat food, and food is available. You can find grocery stores, you can find restaurants, but it is astronomically expensive. Since we've been home, I have felt like every grocery store I visited here is having a giant sale because the stuff is so cheap. So I would say, depending on the size of your rig, bring everything that you can cram in there food-wise. Obviously, canned goods and dry goods will store better. I was very glad that I brought everything that I brought, and because I always overjet, I brought some of it home again, and so we're eating it now. But if you are pinching pennies, it's good to bring as much as you can from home.
And plenty of freezer space, because that's another benefit that we seem to have.
Especially if you want to go fishing and catch the fish and freeze them and bring them home yourself, which is far more economical than having them send them packed in ice to your home before you get there. It's good to have an empty freezer when you start and fill it up with fish.
And if you go out for a day's fishing, as our group did, everybody brought home 25 pounds worth of fish, processed fish.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, you need some place to put that if you're going to go fishing. Possible to eat it fresh, but boy, you want to probably bring some of that home, and that's probably the most expensive fish you'll ever eat. So with that, we're going to kind of end up Alaska, and we're going to kind of give you some statistics and some more, a few comments about the overall itinerary, but this will end it up for our Alaska adventure in 2025. We traveled 8,700 miles round trip from Chicago, and I used 1,100 gallons of diesel, which cost us about $4,600.
And I should say, except for our little diversion into Jasper and Banff National Parks, the mileage is as efficient a route as
we could have coming
and going from our home.
We put about 2,000 miles on the Toad. That's driving round campgrounds. And a lot of people, when they're towing behind their motorhome, they put a bra on the car or some other
protective stuff.
We had no damage to our car, and we had no protection on it. So I'm not really sure whether that was necessary. We didn't do gravel roads. We did some construction, but it wasn't bad. It was dusty. That's one of the things that was prominent. Everywhere it was dusty, and so things got dusty, but, you know, that's going to happen anywhere. And I washed the car in our driveway here at home, and there's this huge brown patch
ring
on our driveway now.
We brought Alaska with us.
I just could not believe it. Dust was just everywhere, and I tried to wash it off. It took me two or three times just to wash the car and get it really clean in all the cracks and crevices.
I think he was out there detailing for about 6 hours altogether.
That's just the nature of it. We spent 11 days going out and back, 11 days out and 11 days back. Of that, we spent 6 days of that actually driving 350 or so miles a day. That's about all I can take. And so we broke it up with a little bit of touring on the way out and touring on the way back. Primarily, on the way back, we went to Banff and Jasper. And just as a little bit of geography, if you go to Dawson Creek, where the caravan starts, directly south is Jasper, and then south of that is Banff. And two world-class places to visit, and you would not want to miss them. Also, you might want to also go to Calgary, which has for the Stampede is the largest rodeo in the world, but that's mid-July sometime. But it's an interesting city
and
just to visit.
And also nearby.
Anyway. So, Jasper and Banff.
Two outstanding world-class parks.
Spent 6 nights
that
there.
Have so much cachet and reputation that everybody who gets within 1,000 miles of them stops to visit them. We tried seeing them at the end of the summer, thinking that it would be less crowded than when families come during the school holidays, but that strategy I don't think worked out very well. It was fall color time, and Edmonton and Calgary are within 2 hours' drive of those two parks, so you get a lot of local traffic as well, people coming there from Vancouver. So those are areas that are just plain too busy.
We were totally shocked.
And you definitely need some campground reservations if you want to make sure that you can stay where you want to stay for as long as you want to stay.
We did not have a chance to go to Lake Louise because you just couldn't get there without going on a tour. You can't just drive there anymore. The other major attractions in that area we just didn't do, although the scenic beauty of Jasper and Banff is just stunning. With that said, you have to be careful with the campgrounds because we were very shocked that, as she just said, that we could not change our reservation. We could not get additional nights. Other people had tried to change their reservation slightly, and we're very glad that we made a reservation. I was kind of reluctant. I said, at the end of September, it's just not going to be that busy.
It's going to be snowing there.
And we can camp wherever we want to. But that was absolutely not true. Unlike Alaska, which we found to be fairly uncrowded by comparison, Banff and Jasper were just packed with people. I think weekend people, maybe. I think local people, maybe. I think out-of-town tourists, lots of foreign languages being spoken, and just a chock-a-block experience. So you really want to plan that one if you're going to, on both ends, I guess.
Yes, we had friends who did those parks before they did the Alaska Caravan and reported the same sort of experience.
So as she says, because it's near two major airports and it has a world-class reputation and it's compact, which we found out, very scenically beautiful and just you can drive, you know, a day between the two cities and really see a lot of mountain scenery in a short period of time.
And because both areas are compact and Jasper was severely impacted by forest fires, which destroyed a lot of their campgrounds, everybody is kind of contained in one small area. So they have done the best that they can to manage all the crowds. There are a lot of shuttle buses and tour companies, but you just cannot jump in your car and go somewhere and park there. You can't assume that.
So after 6 days in Jasper and Banff, we headed directly home through Calgary. We decided to go through Canada because the Route 1 through Canada kind of angles nicely down south, and we could go back across the border in North Dakota. The problem with that is that fuel in Canada is quite expensive. So we were paying $4.50 a gallon or so for
diesel.
And as soon as we crossed the border, it was $3.50. So that's a real conundrum. But we were anxious to get home, and I wanted to. I spent 5 days driving, and that was
enough
to arrive home. The summary is: you spend 1,800 miles getting to Dawson Creek, and then 1,422 miles round trip, and this is, of course, going to be a round tripper. You have to drive the Alcan Highway, and then when you're in Alaska, we only drove another 2,000 miles. So the Alaska part of the trip was actually
the least driving.
You didn't drive that much, but you have to go so far to get there. So the bottom line is, were we happy with Alaska?
You betcha.
Yeah, it's well worth it. And I would go back in a minute. We will be heading back there actually in the spring on a cruise. We do three or four ports in Alaska. But, you know, the cool thing is that you go to different places on a cruise because most of those are not accessible by road. So that's a very interesting experience.
You're reminding me of something else I've been wanting to say. When we're on cruises, if we're on a small cruise ship, most of the passengers that are with us have only been on a small cruise ship. And when we come into a port, let's say in Alaska, and we see a ship that has 3,000 people on it, they just go ballistic with how could you possibly do it that way, and mustn't it be awful to be on those big ships? And as people who have been lucky enough to be on the big ships and the small ships, just like what I've said to you about the various kinds of caravans, each of them have their own pros and cons. And you really shouldn't listen to people's opinions and judgments unless they have been able to experience both kinds of activities, be it with caravans or be it with cruises.
Which is why we wanted to do these interviews and have give you a broad perspective and a fair, balanced viewpoint about traveling to Alaska. And we hope these past few months of our podcast have been helpful as you complete your bucket list by heading to Alaska. But our next month, we're actually doing another bucket list item.
Do you want to talk about it now?
Just, I want to mention it. You're going to want to stay tuned. Well, although we're not going to be in a campground near you, and then, well, we are actually going to be in a campground near you in the near future, but before that, we're heading to Churchill, Manitoba, another place you can't drive to because...
It's on Hudson Bay.
Yeah.
And the land between there and the rest of civilization has no roads. It only has a railroad, and you can fly there.
And we're going there to see the polar bears.
And our friends and neighbors here are saying, what? You're going back to Canada? You just were in Canada. And you want to see bears? Haven't you seen enough bears already? And the answer to that is no.
Well, these are polar bears.
So next month we will talk to you about our experiences there and why we wanted to do both.
But at the beginning of November, we will be transporting our motorhome down to Florida. So we will be actually at a camp, could be at a campground near you. If you're on your way to Florida, come and see us. We will be at the great outdoors starting in early November. So we have a lot going on and a lot more coming up in the near future. So you're going to want to stay tuned to the RV Navigator podcast so that you can hear all of our details. And, well, we want some feedback. If you have questions about Alaska, if you have questions about visiting the polar bears in Manitoba, then shoot us an email and we'll be glad to share with you any ideas that we have. Until next time,
happy travels. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you in a campground near us. Bye now.